What are we talking about?
I was gonna say your mom, but that's
not appropriate. That comes to my mind a lot.
Brutally honest.
Brutally honest.
Everyone's got one.
Everyone's got one.
Step 11.
A mom.
What's step 11? Praying and meditating? Something
prayer and conscious contact.
Something like that. There's a prayer based on
conscious
it.
Conscious contact.
There's a step 11 prayer, I think. St. Anne's prayer.
Oh, really?
St. Francis.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
What is it?
I can paraphrase it.
Oh, I don't know it then.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, the prayer of St. Francis.
Yeah. Yes,
I know that prayer. I don't know it by heart, but I know it's
something. Make me a vessel of thy peace.
Yeah.
Is that it?
It's a good one. So step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand it. Praying only for our knowledge of its will for us and the power to carry that out. What'd you say? St. Francis prayer?
St. Francis prayer.
Well, let's do it. Let's look at it.
Lord, make me a vessel of thy peace. Where there is hatred, I may bring love.
I think we should have one of the professional orators.
Do we have an orator?
Yeah, we got two of them right here.
What? You guys are professional orators?
Yeah.
Really?
We are now. Right.
Oh, okay. Well,
not for literature stuff.
Ready? Go.
All right. So, St. Francis prayer. So, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord grant that I may seek rather to comfort than be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life.
Amen.
Dang.
It's all there. Yeah.
That's it. So that's the podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right, I'm Christian. This is the Most High Show. We just dove right in. And me and Mitchell are chilling with Self Will Run.
Life as we experience it's a big act. And that behind this big act is the player. And the player is you.
Gripping the grain, I grab the mic and I rock it. His dream isn't stopping. These people talking fame and a profit. I'm talking numbers, screaming from the crowd like a rocket. Emotion pouring from the hearts like when my idols were dropping. I think I made it. Happy belated, I have waited. I have struggled through the nights. I've wanted to die like I'm jaded. I used to hate it. Man, I've been searching for my face. I was faded. Never thought I'd see the day. I'm shaking my hand. I'm elated.
It's awesome. All been stated. Yeah. Yeah. Self-will run?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that? Because I have no idea what you're talking about.
You want to take it?
No.
You want me to take it?
Yeah,
well, take it. We were struggling to find a group name for a while, and it was originally Self Will Run Riot, like the recovery slogan.
I like it.
And so the whole premise behind that was, it was two meanings. It was one, nobody's going to do this for us. You know what I mean? Like there's a level of, you know, our own will that has to go into this, you know, like the work ethic and the drive. And also that we can't do this alone. You know, it's not just us that are going to make this happen, and it's not for us directly. You know what I mean? Like this serves, it's meant to serve a greater purpose, you know?
Yeah. And I think we can get so caught up in viewing Self Will Run Riot as a negative connotation. Like I'm operating via self will and that's being bad. And I disagree with that, and especially in sobriety, because it comes to a point when you've, from my own experience, I've done the steps, and I've worked with other sponsees. I've done so much. What do I want to do outside of recovery? Like, what do I want to use my life for? And when I started asking those questions, I realized I'm going to have to make decisions to do the work, and the work isn't what I thought it was. It wasn't call you know, three people a day or go to a meeting and share, the work as an artist or a creative is to start writing, is to make sure you have time to take care of yourself artistically. Like, I have to make selfish decisions on a daily basis.
Yeah, you kind of get to a point where there's a Bible verse in my head, which is, it's often misconstrued. It says, God will give you the desires of your heart. And so people think that that means whatever you desire, God will give you. But what I interpret it as is God gives you the desire. So at some point, your desires change. So early on, our desire is to cause chaos, havoc, run, hide, cheat, steal. And then as we grow and mature spiritual beings, then that desire in your heart becomes to spread love, to be the embodiment of that St. Francis prayer.
And draw pretty pictures.
And that's exactly what happens, because all of a sudden the obsession and the craving to use drugs and alcohol is removed.
Right.
And your desire, like in the beginning for me, my desire was, I don't want to wake up and need something to feel okay.
Right.
And over time, everything's changing. So like if there's all of a sudden it just became natural. That's my default state. I no longer have a desire to use drugs. Why am I feeling scared about getting on stage? Why am I feeling scared about publishing this essay online? Why am I afraid to speak my truth?
Right.
And that's, you know, for me, is like you were saying, it's like following that compass. Yeah. I have to will that. I have to see that I'm afraid and make a decision to move towards it.
Yeah. Very good.
I remember early on, my idea of fun changed. Mm. I didn't plan for that. So my idea of fun was, let's see how many beautiful ladies we can hang out with, and let's see how intoxicated we can get, let's see how much money we can make, and let's make a mess in the process. And at a certain point, that no longer seemed like a fun idea. It seemed like a terrible idea. And then I started having ideas that seemed fun, like creating art, which came back with a vengeance. So I grew up creating art. Well, that passion, that desire that was given to me early on, it was like re-gifted to me.
Yeah.
And so now, hanging out with family, having meaningful conversations, building relationships with my neighbors, things like that to me are really fulfilling and fun. And the last thing I'm thinking about is recruiting a group of attractive ladies to go get intoxicated and create chaos and make a bunch of money and make a mess in the process.
Yeah, because we've realized that those things are not solving the issue that we have, whatever that may be. It's all external stuff. And then, like, I don't know what the motivation is for all this awesome stuff we've got set up, but this is the complete opposite of that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a shift of how we interact with the world. Like, why would someone set a camera up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sounds crazy. Why would somebody want to share what we're experiencing or feeling or thinking? Like, why do I want to make something that says I'm scared and let people know I'm scared? Why would I do that?
Right. Yeah. I'm always amazed by, we had a couple share their story and they just dropped it out there, man. It's like, I'm always amazed. But what you find out is that's kind of what spurred this whole thing, was it's sharing that strength and hope. It's like, if we can make it, if we can live through it, then somebody else can too, right?
Right, and that's the hope, but we'll never know for sure. We'll never know if this has an impact on someone. For the record, we never know unless people tell us they're listening or tell us, but we just don't know. And so one of the trippy part about recovery for me is having to learn, as it continues forward, what do I feel?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what can I feel? Because if I'm not feeling something, I'm not knowing anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know whether or not something feels like there's a connection or there's not. Or I feel like I'm growing and I'm facing fear, or I'm hiding and running away.
Yeah.
And that's the whole self-will run thing, is like, it can go both ways. Like, we'll run away or from the thing, or we can run to the thing.
Yeah.
We all have that choice.
Yeah. It's awesome.
We reached a point recently where I think we started getting some feedback from the universe that we are in fact making a change or affecting people. So we had the two things that stick out to mind to me are, we had a mom who lost her daughter tell us that she'd been watching our podcast as a way of coping and grieving and understanding what happened. And she said that that was one of the things that helped her through this dark period. And then, you know, I had somebody in public stop me and introduce themselves and let me know that their family member is watching our videos in Maine, and we're in Georgia. So it's interesting how when we stuck around long enough and just did the work, suited up and showed up, that we started getting some, like, trail markers. Mm-hmm. I feel like I get trail markers, and they're open to interpretation, but to me, I need those things to let me know that maybe, just maybe, this is having its intended purpose, or even something better.
Mm. And it's easy to forget, too, that, you know, you are making an impact, you know, like, it's those people that come up to you and say, like, I'm listening to your stuff and it's having an impact, that kind of reminds me, because I forget, you know, we've heard our songs so many times that it's like,
yeah,
you know, it gets stale, you know, a little bit. And for me, like, it always just kind of revs me up and, like, reminds me of what the purpose is, you know, like, it's not, you know, like, I enjoy what we do, but it's really about, like, the person that comes up to me and says, like, man, you really inspired me to, like, face my fear, you know, like, I want to get on stage, grab a microphone, or
yeah,
I want to paint something, you know, like, that means so much more than, like, going out and having a really good show, you know,
yeah,
and, like, putting on, you know, getting the crowd hype, you know, it's that one person that comes up and is like, man, you,
yeah,
you know,
you have a line in one of your songs, right, where you're talking to your old, your younger self comes up to you, right?
Is that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of that song?
It's called Dreams.
Yeah.
It's called Dreams.
That song's jamming, man.
Well, that sounds, yeah, like something I can appreciate. You know,
well, the whole premise for that line jamming was like when I was out getting high, like, I listened to Cudi and Kanye and, like, you know, Logic, and those people, you know, they saved my life. Like, they kept me alive, you know, because it was like, I felt like nobody understood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody understood the pain except for them, you know? And so ultimately, like, as an artist, like, I want to be able to have that kind of impact on somebody.
I sat in my Subaru Outback that I was hiding from the repo behind my dad's rental property, locked behind a gate, just getting obliterated every morning listening to Kid Cudi because nothing else made sense.
That was the only person who I thought was like, man, this guy gets it. You know what I mean? Everybody else is just, you know.
I still listen to Cudi now, but I listen to him when I create.
Yeah.
And I think people probably question my musical taste, and that's okay. But he resonates with me.
Yeah.
I think Man on the Moon is our generation's Dark Side of the Moon. It's a concept from beginning to end. It tells a story. Everything you guys just said. I wouldn't be... You know, I wouldn't be alive today if it weren't for the artists that had come before me. Like, Pressfield back there in that book, Cudi, you know, like, Logic, everybody. Mm-hmm. It's like, I need to be, you know, and there's a level of, I guess, truth that can get captured that is, you can't really explain it.
Yeah, art seems to do that. Yeah. I had a song which is not as cool as what you guys.
Song is pretty cool.
No, but it's a Brandy song. Remember Brandy?
Oh, I thought you were talking about your song.
No, this is not macho at all. And it's about her wanting to quit the industry. And it's the chorus is like, should I stay, should I go?
Mm-hmm.
And the sample is a Coldplay sample. It's dope. And it's like a Timbaland track. And so I was bummed out the other day and that song came on. And I was like, oh. I'm in control. That's the chorus is, should I go, should I stay, should I go? I'm in control either way. So I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I can, it's up to me to decide. Yeah, that's a Brandy song did that to me.
No, I mean, that's what's so fascinating about it is, I don't think we really decide, you know, when these moments are going to happen.
Right, yeah.
Or who they're going to be that present them, or what it's going to be.
Yeah.
That's what's so fascinating about me. Like, the best example is like when I'm looking at Netflix, I'm trying to decide to watch a movie. I'm scrolling and I'm waiting for something in me to say, I'm curious or I want to watch this.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that's going to be before something tells me.
Yeah. 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 So we're talking about conscious contact with God.
Yeah, I was thinking.
And I think we're kind of also dancing around that, right? Because, I mean, anytime you talk about God, you got to use metaphor, because you can't really. God is like, because we have no real words for whatever God is, right?
Unless you want to alienate certain people.
Well, it's a concept.
Yeah.
And any human concept is limited by its humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic, the spiritual aspect and the importance of that in the 12 steps, you know, and whatever that is to whoever, but that there is some sort of, I don't know if it's a surrender or an allowing, it's a, you have to let go. In my experience, I have to let go in order to have some sort of conscious contact with God. Because of my default state, I will, you know, make it all up. And my own ego becomes the voice of God. And then I'm like running circles around, wondering what the hell am I doing.
Yeah, it's the best way I can simplify it to now is there's my way, and then there's the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I've got to notice within myself the narratives that are forming. It's like now I realize this, and we've been talking about this a lot. It's like the thoughts I'm having aren't the problem. It's what I'm thinking about those thoughts.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah,
you know, it's
replacing on them.
Our brains are hardwired with a voice in our head, and it's rationalizing and interpreting our environments, assigning judgment, meaning, everything, and it's making it all about me all the time. And the key to, I think, what we're talking about, like, the key is to recognizing, like, whatever I've been doing is not working. So if I listen to other people and I'm open to anything that's not me, I might have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking visually for a moment here, and sometimes I'll have an idea, and it's not in words, it's in a vision. And so I had this vision of when I was getting loaded, it was like sailing, and the source, the wind, was pushing me further and further away from the source, so to speak, right? But when you learn how to sail, you learn this process called tacking, and you can actually make your way back toward the source of the wind by going back and forth.
Against the wind.
It's like the wind hits you from the side, but you can capture enough of it and then go back and forth. And so getting sober has been like that, and that it was very easy and comfortable for so long until the wind blew me so far off track that I got lost and everything was destroyed around me. So it was like someone taught me how to sail back toward the source. And, you know, you never get there because the wind, you never find the source of the wind, but you can kind of like orient yourself to move toward the light, so to speak. So this program that we talk about with the 12 steps is it's a very paradoxical, I think is the word. And so you'll come in and people say, oh, work them in order. But there's a caveat. You can pray and meditate right off the rip. And making conscious contact in the form of prayer and meditation is something that I think we should probably do sooner rather than later.
Mm.
And so for me, I did. I started sitting in the sun, feeling the light, closing my eyes, praying, which was kind of like making the soil fertile for something spiritual. And then I sit there and see what comes. And normally it was something inspirational and wholesome. So I just kept doing that.
Yeah.
Plus I got a tan.
Yeah.
My ego like that.
I think all 12 seem to come and manifest in some way every day for us,
for sure.
Whether we're conscious of it or not, you know, it comes into play, hopefully. Yeah. So you guys have a cool story about how you got connected. You shared it at the show. Cut to the show.
A little louder with the paper that has a debate. We need you at the front. Cloud and Gum. It's the guy right there. Spitzel Bar, how you feeling? Let's get loud. Where's Self Will Run? Man AZ. Peace for me. Let's do it. Take a second to listen. I'm spitting this lyrical message. Coming up on the beat with ease, but I'm searching for reference.
back.
Glad you're back with us.
And I'd like for you to share that, because I thought that was pretty cool. And I'm really interested to know what the name of your mixtape was, and because I want to hear it.
All yeah. Right.
So go ahead.
For sure. So I started writing when I got, the first time I tried to get sober, January 2013. It just kind of happened by chance. Like I was listening to a Logic album that he just dropped, and it was just the best thing I'd ever heard at the time. It was just, it resonated, and something inside just told me, like, just sit down and try to write a rap, you know. And it just kind of happened, and it was like I just felt this rush that I hadn't felt, you know. Like it was like I felt like I found that thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know that,
yeah.
Like, you know, like as an artist, like you always feel like at a young age, like I always feel like I feel like I'm meant to do something, you know. I don't know what that is yet, but I feel like there's something there, you know. And I felt like I found it.
Mm-hmm.
And it became like a new, you know, addiction, really. It was like this is it right here. So I started just writing, and you know, ended up relapsing and then coming back into recovery this last time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, because coming back in, like, I knew that that's really what I wanted to do, you know. Like I felt called to that, so it was almost like I had a sense of a reason to stay sober. Like I knew that this would never happen if I was getting high.
Mm-hmm.
Ever, because I just never wanted to amount to anything, you know what I mean, when I was getting high. Like it wasn't gonna work. So the mixtape, it's called Relapse Prevention. We had a relapse prevention packet in Ridgeview.
Mm-hmm.
Which is where I went to rehab, and plug Ridgeview.
Yeah, shouts out. That's my alma mater too.
So, you know, when you're leaving Ridgeview, they're like, you got to do the relapse prevention packet so you don't relapse, you know. Uh-huh. You got to write down your plan. And
uh-huh.
So, you know, the title of the mixtape was like, that was the plan, you know what I mean? Like those songs were written in my first year and a half of sobriety. It was like me making sense of like everything, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, why do I feel so fucking crazy all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Why can't I like express myself, like, you know? Why do I struggle so much with that, you know? And why does it feel so right doing it this way?
Yeah.
You know?
And there's this dude out there with a cell phone with just an instrumental beat, not very loud, just going in, like, believing, saying what he's saying, and I'm watching this, and I was just so taken aback at how abnormal it was. At first, I was like, I felt uncomfortable for him.
Oh, that was him?
That was Patrick.
Was, yeah. Oh, yeah. I like it.
I felt uncomfortable for him, that because I didn't understand anything. I was like, what is going on here? You know? And then I went up to him and I started listening, and I was like, he's on to something here. And he gave me the mixtape, Relapse Prevention. And I didn't think anything about it. I put it in my car, and this is early sobriety for me. I was still just trying not to use dope every day. 2 weeks later, I throw it in, and I listen to it from beginning to end, and it felt like he was telling my story to me.
Wow.
In a way that I'd always dreamed I could do, but never had the courage to. So from that moment, after I heard that record, I found him and was like, whatever I can do to help, we're going to figure out how to do this.
Yes. For me, that was the beginning of, like, the journey, you know, because it was like, I had this, like, preconceived idea that, like, I'm just gonna make this mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna bring it to me with meeting to bring it with me to meetings and just handing out to people, and then I'm just gonna be it's just gonna work, you know.
Yeah, right.
Like it's just gonna happen.
Right.
You know,
Square Garden's sold out now.
And yeah. Like it didn't work out, you know. And it's been like a challenge, like facing the fear, you know.
Yeah.
Of like getting on stage for the first time. Like I was scared as shit. I showed up and it was like straight out of 8 Mile. It's me and, you know, two of my buddies, and I'm wearing like boat shoes and like a Guy Harvey shirt. And they're like, what is this guy doing here, man? Like he needs to leave, man. Like, he doesn't need to be up here. And I just stood on stage and I was just up there like skibbity-gibbity-gibbity-gibbity, like just staring at the ground, didn't move at all.
Yep.
And I'll never forget, man, a guy came up to me and he pulled me to the side and he's like, dude, you gotta own that shit, dude.
Like, yeah.
you got something, man. Just like own it, you know. Don't stare at the ground. Like own that, dude. You know.
Yeah.
And this whole process has been like learning how to own it, you know.
Yeah.
Like really coming into that.
And you kind of came into writing because you weren't writing at first, right?
Yeah, I've been terrified of rapping forever. It's the one thing I've always loved, hip hop. And I've always dabbled. I used to get messed up all the time. I'd try to freestyle, and you know, I'm obsessed with Eazy-E, N.W.A., Ice Cube, Dr. Dre. I just love the whole culture and everything about it, but scared to do it. So mine was, you know, started with bass guitar, and then it went to writing essays, podcasts, videos, films, just in the means to express myself. But in the back of my mind, I always knew, and Pressfield talks about in The War of Art, he says in the book, he says basically, the one thing that you're afraid the most to do is the thing that you need to do.
Mm.
And it took me 7 years, you know, to actually face my fear and rap.
Wow.
Speaking of that, Wyclef?
Yeah.
Pardon.
So, you know, my whole, I guess, take on it is you know, I don't know, you know, I could go in for on like what happened to me to make me afraid to do it, but like I do know that we all have that fear about something.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with me as simple as Pat was saying, is I'm afraid to get on stage. That's it. That's all I needed to know. And so I moved that way.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I have, I used to do music. I had some songs on Jersey Shore and MTV and on Showtime on the L Word. Had this group called the Manager Boys. And I did an album right before I got sober, which I think was my best album because you can hear the battle going on, you know? And then I made two others after that. No one cared once I got sober, so I stopped making music. But what's interesting is sometimes I'll put those songs on and it's like, oh snap, that's why I made that song, so that I could hear it right now. Because it all of a sudden, it's like, was foretelling some strange truth about where I was going to be at. So it's really interesting when you get into that creative process, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, I think you said that when I saw you at the show, you're like, we're doing it backwards, because now I feel like I'm moving away from music. I've moved away. And so my way of creating is creating this content, trying to communicate the concept of God, or trying to help people through pain and suffering. And so there's a whole creative process to that if you approach it, and it can be kind of fun.
Well, that's what I've learned is the key, is like, I've got the idea of what I think I need to do, but I don't know. Like, I'm not the one who decides what's best for me. When I realize that, when I realize there's forces beyond the realm of my comprehension, you know, I thought I was just going to design an app and then world tour about the app. Like, that's what I thought I was supposed to do. And I was almost, in a sense, trying to find any avenue or form to express myself that wasn't rap because I was afraid.
Wow, yeah.
So, like, it was just a matter of time, and it changes. It's like, who knows, like, 2 years, 3 years from now, maybe we figured out what we needed with rap, and all of a sudden we're a banjo band, you know? Like, who knows? Like, the form to express yourself and the way that it manifests in the world, you know, it's to be open to letting that be what it wants to be rather than boxing it in a certain way.
Yeah. I definitely held on to that. Like, my identity was in... Because I started rapping, I was like... 11, 12, used to do freestyle competitions, come home with trophies and stuff. And so that's what I wanted to do. I heard Ice-T, Ryan Pace, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be a rapper. And then I was like, well, if I'm going to be a rapper, I got to live my life, right? Because every rapper got to have a story.
Oh, yeah.
So then I started getting into criminal behavior and drugs and stuff like that because I want to be a rapper. And then it just kind of took on from there. And then it became my identity. To the point where it was like, at all costs, no matter what, I'm gonna do this, you know? And what was interesting is when the week I got out of rehab was the week that our song premiered on Jersey Shore.
Hmm.
And so I'm sitting, I remember very distinctly, I'm sitting on the couch. It's this very joyous, like, moment. But the song's called Go Out Tonight, and it's about getting wasted. And I'm like, immediately was like, oh, snap. I'm not going to be able to do this. I can't hit the road. I can't go and tour. Because the next steps for that song was going to be to, you know, start hitting radios and then start trying to do shows, right? Because, you know, I mean, that premiered to, like, I still get checks from that.
Yeah.
From that one thing. So I realized that, dang, my dream had been fulfilled, right? And there it was, like, right at the grass, right at the cusp. And talk about conscious contact with God. That was, like, a very huge moment when I just heard God say, you gotta put that down. Mm. Man. And man, that was my dream up to that point, 34 years old, right? Or something like that. And I had to let it go.
Dude, that is awesome.
Was it like a trail marker?
Yeah, but everything sucked after that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had no idea who I was after
that. That's what happened was who you were caught up to you, and it's not who you, and who you had been up until that you fell into recovery.
Yeah.
Everything's like a wake. Like, we do things, and then it takes time for the world to catch up to it, and the things we say and the things we do are going to come back. Mm-hmm. So that came back to you, and when you were in a totally different space, you're ready to figure out what the fuck you want to do with your life, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's saying, oh, by the way, you were partying all the time, and now the world appreciates you for that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing. I see all these kids were tweeting, this is my song. I mean, I could tell that people were, like, in high school and stuff. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm beginning to contribute to the thing that almost killed me.
Man, yeah, dude.
Yeah. So I switched to making, you know, positive Jesus music, and it just didn't have the same impact. I performed a couple rehabs and stuff like that, but it just stopped. Once my ego got out of it, you know, it just kind of stopped. And then I stopped hearing lyrics. I stopped hearing melodies. You know, because I produce and write my own stuff. So I just stopped hearing all that. And then I began that conscious contact. God started moving me into a different direction. So I haven't wrote anything or performed anything in years.
I mean, that relates to exactly what you were saying earlier about, you know, wind guiding us. That, like, to be able to be in touch with how things make us feel, with a clear mind state, we're able to coast and surf what wants to happen rather than, you know, what we think wants to happen.
Right.
Because there is no form, like, there's so many different forms that we can express ourselves with. It doesn't have to be just music or just video or just anything. It can be everything or nothing.
It's like you're harnessing a power greater than yourself and you don't know where you're going.
Right.
But you've got the willingness and the faith to keep going. And when you see a trail marker that tells you to tack the other way,
you just keep going. One day at a time, in a sense, you know, right?
Yeah, because in your story, it's like you realize that that's not the point. The point is not being on MTV and millions of people's phones and hearing your voice. That wasn't, it didn't give you anything. It didn't service your soul.
Mm-mm.
And so now the quest is, how do I feel connected? How do I service myself and hopefully in return other people?
Yeah.
I remember that moment in New York. It was kind of a similar moment, but it was before I got sober. And if you could have asked me as a young man what my list of success would have been, it would have been, you know, living in a world-class condo in a major city with a beautiful woman and amazing dogs and a fabulous wardrobe with my own company and plenty of cash. And I had that, and I was empty. And so I was put in a position to ask myself, where did I go wrong? And so when I got sober, I had plenty of time to reevaluate why, when I did everything I thought I wanted to do and got everything I thought I wanted, why I was so empty. And so luckily this 12-step process allowed me to kind of discover my higher self rather than a primitive being that I think was my identity as a younger man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff. I'm thinking of this, there's this, like a reporter goes up to a Buddhist monk and says, what do Buddhist people do? And he says, well, Buddhists, we eat, we drink, we walk, we sleep. And the reporter goes, well, everyone does that. And the Buddha says, yeah, but when the Buddhists walk, we know we're walking. When we're eating, we know we're eating. And when we're drinking, we know we're drinking. And that's the difference, is that like now we know when we're doing something, we're present in that moment, right? Whereas before we were like miles away, you know, almost like subconsciously moving through life. And that's one of the things I think the gift of the 12 step and whatever, however it's worked out, whatever program it's worked out in. But it's like, man, like you could pretty much put this stuff in like high schools and help people to kind of self-actualize a little bit before they begin to go on the journeys that we all have seemed to go on, right?
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's only one problem with that.
What?
They wouldn't have the willingness to do it.
But it could be framed, and I mean, see, that's the thing, is like, and that's why I obsess over this type of stuff. Like, I'm constantly trying to figure out the psychology of why we behave the way we behave.
Yeah.
And to stop drugs and alcohol, the desire to use drugs and alcohol, there's a system and a protocol that will alleviate that. Now, to format it in a way that could create mindfulness and self-discovery and brotherly love and community, things like that. Like, I mean, we don't even teach how to do taxes in school.
Right.
You know, like, we're not... I agree. I think there's aspects of this stuff that could be formatted in a way that's humanistic, which means it does not adhere to any sort of spirituality or ideology, but it's just ethics and morality.
Right.
Who cares to be rigorously honest?
See, that's the thing. You look at kids, they are. Like, kids are going to tell you what they think and how they feel. And if they can't, they're going to show it by crying or getting upset.
Yeah.
But along the way, somehow we develop these protections or these systems around ourselves that tell us we have to be a certain way. And we're not allowed to dance or sing or cry in public or say I'm sad. You know, it's not, you don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Richard Rohr talks about that. He says that for a child, the container is not strong enough yet to handle those, like, criticisms and pitfalls. And so that's why the breakdown comes. And that's what he talks about the ego. That's when the ego starts to form. Because the ego does protect you in that early stage of development, because then you realize, oh, well, I got to be this, I got to be that. And so the ego will keep you alive and living up to a certain point until it's like no longer useful. And the problem is that not everybody decides that it's no longer useful and moves on. Most people just stay with the ego as the God, basically, you know. And then they never move past that into actually whatever the next phase, the second phase of life is.
Have you heard the acronym for ego?
Huh.
Easing God out.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also, you know, ego is our sense of self, too. Like, that's...
Yeah.
And it can become inflamed. And I think what I've noticed is that as human beings, there's two aspects of us. We have the ability to control our environment. Like, we have that ability. I can pick this coffee mug up, put it down. We can make buildings and structures. And then there's our natural tendencies that are beyond our control. The blood that flows through my veins, the breath that's happening constantly without my awareness.
Yep.
So the key is recognizing, like, what I can control and what I can't. And the reality is everything in nature is kind of curvy and wavy.
Right.
We, as humans, with a need for control and a need for protecting ourselves, or defining reality as it exists so we can at least comprehend it and feel safe, because the truth of the matter is being alive and not knowing why we're here is a scary it's a scary thought.
Yeah.
So we create systems and concepts to allow us to be and create or do the things that we think we want to do, because we have the ability to control the environment. So in essence, figuring out, you know, where it is that, you know, the kids thing in general is like, for kids, they have no awareness that they are alive. They just are.
Right.
And I think, like, I'm really into Buddhist philosophy and Hindu philosophy, because it talks about the idea, or the attainment is actually emptiness, is realizing that you're not thinking. You're just being.
Right.
And so when a Buddhist is drinking the coffee or eating the food, they're not thinking about the fact that they're a dude in a temple eating the food. They're just enjoying this meal.
Right.
That's it's just being in the moment. And kids are naturally able to just be in the moment. We as adults, we've lost that ability.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the things we can control and the things we can't, and then bring it back to prayer and meditation. We pray for the wisdom to know the difference. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, any final thoughts? Anything like you want to say if someone's watching this, listening to this, they're out there or they're thinking about going back out there, what would you guys say to somebody in that position? What encouragement or hope can you give? Not to put you on the spot.
I got one thing that came to mind. So I came into this program with no spiritual beliefs. The church of my understanding to me was not accurate or effective. And so when I was asked to pray, I thought that was a strange request. So I set that to the side. At a certain point, this old timer said to me, he said, think of prayer like working out. You don't have to believe in working out, but if you do it, you're going to get the results. And he said, maybe, just maybe, this prayer thing is like working out. And I don't really care if you believe in it or not, but just try it.
Yeah.
And there was this literature that I read that said something to the effect of those who haven't experienced the effects of prayer haven't prayed enough to experience the results. And so my take home for this for anybody who is opposed to prayer is that if you try it enough, it might just work.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and I think two things. Listening, I have to have people in my ear via stuff like this or podcasts or music. I have to have people that represent ways I'd like to be talking to me. I need their voice because mine isn't sufficient. So I need to be listening a lot, and then I also need to be sharing. So just communicating, letting people know how I'm thinking and feeling, whoever that is.
Yeah.
That's and good. To me, that's kind of meditation too.
Yeah. I guess I would say, like, you know, to somebody who's wanting to go back out, like, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, no matter how bad it may seem in the time. Like, my personal experience is, like, these feelings pass, you know, and who we are changes over time. So,
yeah. All right. Well, that's it.
What about you?
What?
Is there anything you want to say? Like, what would you say is, like, the thing that keeps you grounded or keeps you able to keep moving forward?
I would say to stay in the present moment, you know? I think that whatever God is, that's where God is in the present moment. And so whatever you got to do, some of us have to break patterns. Some of us are stuck in a pattern. So you have to break a pattern. A pattern could be really small. It could be like if you usually get up, you brush your teeth, and then you go downstairs, maybe don't brush your teeth. Like begin to break the pattern. Begin to find where you are and like who you are in that very specific moment, because if you are trying this way of life, then anytime you get beyond that, you get too far ahead or you get too far back, you're in two places that don't exist, right? The past and the future. And the only thing that does exist and the only thing you can do about anything is what you can do right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. All right.
Each day is a gift. What do you call it, the present?
Work it if you work it. Dang!
Drop the mic on
and roll a self-will song.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Your essential self is the foundation of the universe. Just as the waves are continuous with the ocean, your body is continuous with the total energy system of the cosmos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wanna run away sometime. Wanna run away sometime. Oh, yeah. Wanna run away sometime.
reason to rhyme. I dream of purpose and a meaning in a feeling sublime. I dream of past particle progression, no need to mention. I dream of meeting you, giving it up for our ascension. Like, I dream of the world, I dream of health. I dream of my society with a pocket full of wealth, no need for stealth. And then I living it, bending it, giving it, ripping it, bringing it back. Like, in my past life, am I my right? Am I living in truth? Am I all right? Like, I think that I can see, but I don't know. I think that we've been climbing so long that we forgot to glow. I think that we've been seeing ourselves so much to show. I think that we've been living and giving around, we're about to blow. Like, I don't really know, but I wanna run away sometime. I don't really know. I don't really know, but I wanna run away sometime.
Life as we experience it's a big act, and that behind this big act is the player, and the player is you.
Gripping the grain, I grab the mic and I rock it. His dream isn't stopping. These people talking fame and a profit. I'm talking numbers, screaming from the crowd like a rocket. Emotion pouring from the hearts like when my idols were dropping. I think I made it. Happy belated, I have waited. I have struggled through the nights. I've wanted to die like I'm jaded. I used to hate it. Man, I've been searching for my face. I was faded. Never thought I'd see the day. I'm shaking my hand. I'm elated. It's all been stated. Wasn't about us being doubted or clouded or anything. All these other people I'm proud of. It's about the love for the craft and the outcome of people following their dreams, hoping you discover yours when you think you don't have one. That was Cuddy, that was Ye, that was Logic, that was Drake, Cole Shady, Dr. Dre. They were there when I would break, saying pick up the pieces and you'll be great. Hoping one day I can be one to share in the fate. Like, I see a kid after a show with tears in his eyes. He said your music saved my life when I wanted to die. I put my hand up on his shoulder, man, this is the dream, because I finally met myself and my idols for me.
Thank you so much, Daniel. That was fucking awesome, dude.